Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know why the recording wasn't playing. Well, we'll have to fix that real quick. Nothing that you hear in this call in any way, shape, or form may be deemed by you to be legal advice or financial advice. Those seeking legal advice or financial advice are politely required and are requested to hang up from this call and to seek legal advice, financial advice from the appropriate counselors that the state you live in authorizes to give legal advice or financial advice. So I'll just stop there, and what we're going to do is pick up where we left off by reading in The Greatest Story Never Told. This is direct application to why you should sincerely have the efforts made to correct your political citizenship status from that of someone who is a subject and enterprise of the United States to that of an American national, who are the people referred to in We the People. So we're now, let's see what we've already covered. Let me share with that. We had the first chapter with citizenship, followed by our money system, the trust, the IRS, what is the U.S., the courts, the remedy still exists in words and terms. Tonight, we're going to talk about the government and the church. This is going to be a very interesting conversation. This chapter may not be for everyone who is interested in retaining or regaining his or her rights as an American. I want to make it very clear that you do not have to be a Christian in order to be an American national. Being one, however, can make it easier to live and operate in the trust world without a Social Security number. I strongly suggest that it would be a mistake of monumental proportions to try to fake being a Christian in order to receive the benefits that come as a result of this belief pattern, much as in the same magnitude as choosing to be a citizen of the United States as opposed to being an American national. And that's only the consequences in this worldly lifetime. So if you're not a Christian, you may want to just hang up tonight and come back next week. The church has been referred to as a sanctuary for hundreds and hundreds of years, millennia actually. Even today, many refer to the church as a sanctuary. But the truth is that there are two types or formations of the Christian church. Both types are recognized within the United States Code. I repeat, both types are recognized within the United States Code, more specifically within the Internal Revenue Code. And that likeness is about all the two have in common, except that they both claim to worship the Christ, Messiah, Yahushua, whom you call the Christ Jesus. The first of the two types of churches is found under Section 501c3 of the Internal Revenue Code, where it states, quote, list of exempt organizations. It continues on saying that corporations and any community chest, fund, or foundation organized and operated exclusively for religious, charitable, scientific testing. One second. There we go. Scientific testing for public safety, literary or educational purposes, or to foster national or international sports competition, but only if no part of the activities involve the provision of athletic facilities or equipment, or for the prevention of cruelty to children or to animals, no part of the net earning of which inures to the benefit of any private shareholder or individual, no subsequential part of the activities of which is to carry on propaganda or otherwise attempt to influence legislation, except as otherwise provided in subsection H, and which does not participate in or intervene in including the publishing and the distribution of statements, any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for public service, end quote. This is printed in its entire subsection so that you might better understand who and what this or these churches are in relevance to the rest of society, and what the rules of these churches must abide by in order to keep your status as an exempt organization. First, please take note that this, quote, so-called church is a corporation. That's right. Each church, wishing to be tax-exempt under 501c3 of the Internal Revenue Code, is incorporated. What that actually means is that their origin and source is the government, i.e. the United States. Therefore, there is a list of rules which must be obeyed in order to maintain that status. Now, the United States, you know, all uppercase, is actually the grantor of this church's being. So where does the Almighty One fit in? Very carefully, if at all, would be the correct answer. As you will note from the code itself, this church is very limited in its ability to do certain things. For instance, it cannot become political in any way. This seems a little ridiculous to most people. After all, don't most religious people want to consult their religious leaders about possible candidates for public office? And don't most Christians want to have a say in who represents them? Well, if the church's leaders are discovered making political statements or giving assessments on who would be a good representative and why, that church can then lose its exemption. This very thing actually happened to a Baptist church in Massachusetts in as recently as 1992. The minister said from the pulpit that a vote for Bill Clinton would be a mortal sin. And the IRS pulled its church tax exemption status as a result. Any of you who watched the 700 Club or TV probably followed the story, but that church still has not received back its exemption. But what if the Almighty One did in fact direct this minister to tell his flock to vote for a particular person or not vote for a particular person? In real Christian churches, would the government be able to tell the minister not to obey what he believes the Almighty One told him to do? Well, if he does not obey the Almighty One in this case, his church loses its tax exemption. Now you ask, why would any church obligate itself to such ungodly rules? The answer also is simply money. The church gets a large portion of its income from people who wish to deduct these gifts, their tithes, their offerings, their donations, and so forth, from their own personal tax returns at the end of the year. Many other major contributions are made for the explicit reason that they can be deducted directly off the giver's tax return, and many times can throw that person into a lower tax bracket in the process. That means that such a contribution can very well wind up actually making the giver money as a result of a lower tax bracket. If the church could not accept tax-deductible contributions, their revenues would fall sharply. Consequently, the churches actually prostitute themselves and many of their principles just to maintain this exemption. But you say, not my church. We follow the Almighty One, and the government has nothing to do with the way we run our church's affairs. There's a way that you can know for sure or certain if this is true. Simply ask your church for a receipt so that you can deduct your contributions from your tax return. If they give you one, your tax has its foundations based upon the trust and not upon the Almighty One. In the Bob Jones University case, the Supreme Court ruled that a contribution to a 501c3 church was always tax deductible because it was, in fact, a government subsidy. Could that mean your money that is given to the church is really going to the government? Well, as a matter of fact, yes. It could mean exactly that. You see, that church that offers the tax deductions to its contributors is actually a corporation, and it has its origins and its source in the trust doing business as the United States, all uppercase. Therefore, anything going on to the church is really going directly into the trust account and is therefore tax deductible. It's tax deductible because it's being paid directly into the trust system at its origin. Now, you ask just which church is this that we're talking about? It's just about every church that you've ever thought as being a church. It's the Baptists. It's the Methodists. It's the Catholics, as we know it in this country. It's the Church of God and most others, which you can think of, with a very few notable exceptions that we're going to cover a little bit later in this conversation. If you belong to one of these churches and you don't believe what I'm telling you, go to your pastor or your church accountant and ask to see the form that is filled out and sent to the IRS every 3 months. It's 13 pages long. It covers everything from who gave contributions to exactly what is done with the contributions. It probably says something about you in there. Then ask to see a list of the corporate rules that the church is required to follow in order to keep its tax-exempt status. If you're told that there's no such thing, you're being lied to. You can call the IRS and get a copy of these regulations yourself. Remember, there's always rules that must be kept in order to maintain a corporation. If you don't believe that, file a corporation for yourself and see. Also remember that your church leaders are not going to want you to know the whole truth about what they are being forced to do in order to keep the tax-exempt status. What all this means is that the church that you thought was independent of and of the Almighty One is actually very much dependent on the trust, the United States, all uppercase. This church actually represents the equivalent of what the Church of England represented to our forefathers. It is a church of, by, and for the government. It's also represented in the New Testament by the Pharisees. Remember these guys who were always trying to collect taxes from Yahushua, or you call Jesus? It's the same people, just in a different costume. There's another church, but few even know it exists. And it's found in the Internal Revenue Code under 508C, Charlie, where it states C, exemptions, mandatory exemptions. Subsection A and B shall not apply to A, churches, their integrated auxiliaries, and conventions or association of churches, end quote. This is what Justice Beshear offers you on the Saturday night call. It's exactly what this is. This section is referring to the filing requirements for 501c3 organizations, and it clearly says that churches are an exception, not an exemption, an exception to the law. And note that 501c3, the church there, is a corporation. If your church files a tax return, it is a corporation, and it is not the church referred to in 508c. The church referred to in 508C is obviously unorganized and definitely not a corporation. And as such, it is outside of the jurisdiction of the Internal Revenue Service and the all uppercase United States. This is why Justice Beshear, who has thousands of students who have purchased the charitable religious trusts and the many hundreds who have purchased the corporation soul, have had total absence of intervention by the United States or the Internal Revenue Service, as long as you comply with those two rules that we all talk about on the Saturday call, which is do not commit any criminal activity within those entities and do not commingle taxable money with non-taxable money. You follow those two rules, it's easy peasy, and no one ever has been received so much as a phone call from the Internal Revenue Service. It can truly be the Almighty One's church, and it's formed on the very basis that Yahushua, whom you call Jesus, set out while on earth. It is the sanctuary that we always heard that the church is supposed to be. It is the resting place and the safe shelter for those who seek refuge from the tyrannical government now in place. You may wonder what churches fall under this umbrella. There are, in fact, many, but probably only a few that you've heard of. The most noted church or group that you would recognize is the Amish. Most of you know that the Amish are well known for not partaking in the system or its ways. What many don't know is that they don't pay taxes of any kind. Did you hear that? They don't pay taxes of any kind. They won't take Social Security numbers, and therefore they cannot be taxed. And they're only subject to the jurisdiction of the government if they break one of the common laws, American common laws, for which jurisdiction was surrendered by our forefathers. The fact that they don't use modern tools or equipment has nothing to do with the sovereignty they enjoy in their everyday lives. In fact, there are many churches which are a product of Americans who have been studying the law as it applies to them and their freedoms. Those Americans have found a refuge in the unincorporated 508C church, where they can live their lives, both spiritually and literally, without the trust's interference. For those people, the 23rd Psalm will take on a whole new meaning. Matthew 23 can be read with a whole new meaning as well as a better understanding. Once you understand that a 508C church, once you understand what it is, now go back and read these verses, and you perhaps may receive a totally new and wonderful understanding. The proof of what I just said to you is abundant. A 508C church can open a bank account that nobody, not even the IRS, can even look at. Remember, the 508C is an exception to the law. In other words, it's outside the law. It's not an exemption that the code gives as a privilege. It's an exception. Among the 508C churches, anything that the 508C church owns cannot be taxed or seized by the government. It has its domicile in a different jurisdiction. Well, this concludes the comments tonight on the government and the churches, and I would like to have some conversation on that tonight with a Q&A. Next week, we're going to be talking about the best kept secret, which is something that should be of great interest to you. So let's open it up for questions. Press star 2 on your keypad. I know that Michael from Las Vegas is going to have something to say, because he is a key proponent and a strong student of the 508, this church. Press star 2 in your keypad. While you're thinking about doing that, I'm going to go over to Freedoms Radio and see if there anyone there that has written in a question or a comment. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, you simply look to the center right of your monitor. You'll see the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left-click into it, type away your comment or question underneath as a place to put your name, and then underneath your name, you can sit there and put some other information, hit submit, it pops up on my end, and we'll go from there. So our first comment actually came from Bruce out of Texas. Go ahead, Bruce.
Hey, good evening. So maybe I'm missing something, but so what is the basic difference between the 508 and the 501?
The 5013C is a corporation granted into its existence by the United States, all uppercase. So the United States is the grantor, if you would, the creator of the corporation. And as such, it has total control over any and all content that comes in and goes out of that so-called church. It is a government church, no different than the Anglican Church of England that our founding fathers were working through. They knew the difference between that and what we have under 508C of the Internal Revenue Code. And again, the perfect place to be in asking these questions on that would be on the Saturday call with Justice Beshear. Or actually, since I'm doing his calls and I wouldn't want to go further without his comment, just give me a call tomorrow. I'll bring him in and you can explain.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah. In a nutshell, the 508 is not a government created corporation.
Correct. In fact, if you go to the website, www.theultimateinassetprotection.com, I think you have to, right now in our transition period, you have to actually type in HTTP, not PS, just HTTP, https://www.theultimateinassetprotection.com. You have to go through that machination right now. But hopefully that will be changing this week when they get everything reorganized in Iceland.
Is it the ultimate in asset protection or the ultimate asset protection?
No, the ultimate in asset protection.com. You go to that website, and anything and everything that you ever wanted to know about this lawful, unorganized religious community is going to be found there.
Okay. Cool. That kicks over to Americans Restoring America.com.
Yeah, usually the way I intended to have it all set up, and so sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. No matter what website you go to, it always directs you there. Yes, well,
it's always there. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
It should always direct you to Americans Restoring America First. There's a little screen that pops up and says, you know, if you'd like to continue on where you've asked to go, click here. If not, stop here for a moment and see what's going on.
Very good. Thank you.
Sure, Bruce. Anyone else? Press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand. Press star 2 on your keypad. All right. I knew it. I knew it. Michael, what's up?
How are we doing?
We're doing fine. How are you feeling?
I'm still sore, but I'm getting better slowly.
Okay.
I can walk around quite a bit now without pain.
Drugs are good.
Yeah. Anyway, a charitable religious society is not a corporation. It's a society, and they don't have control over societies. They had trading societies or trading companies. I think they had trading societies at the turn of this century, but all of that's gone away. They seek to keep everybody in the realm of you have to file this form or that form or some form. And I don't remember anybody when I was studying any of this that back in the 1800s that kept any forms at all for them.
Right. Well, if you study the calls that we have on Wednesday night, the limited liability company that Mr. Slevin offers does not have a tax liability itself. And we go into detail as to how that's possible.
That's something I wanted to look at in close detail. I have some people that have stores that they can't put money in the bank, make deposits. And most of them have no idea that they don't have to participate in the federal system.
Correct.
I know my grandfather didn't and my great-grandfather didn't participate in their system at all because they dealt in gold and silver. So.
Right.
But people today are so intimidated that they have no clue and have no desire to stand up to them at all.
Correct.
But if they just watch what's going on with the January 6th,
that's kind of blowing apart in everybody's face now, isn't it?
They said, oh, well, we're going to look at these films, and these are the ones you can talk about. But wait a minute, there's 40,000, and you can only talk about 4.
Right.
Anytime you have officials saying you can only do this, it's time to lock and load. There's more and more people that I see that are starting to wake up to the fact, and you see it all over now online, that they recognize that there's something other than what they're telling us.
Right.
But
I hope everybody understood what we talked about tonight regarding churches and how you actually, you and your wife and your children are a religious society in its own right. Adam and Eve were the first religious society. And it's, you know, and today it's under the, it's recognized, I should say. It's not under, it's recognized, at 508C, for its existence. So, there you go. Anyone else? Press star 2 on your keypad. We don't want to make it that short tonight. Anything else, Michael?
No, that's it for right now. I just want to see if anyone else will kick in here.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're feeling better. I'm glad that you're feeling better. Yeah, Duncan came aboard. Duncan, what's up, Duncan?
Hello, hello.
Question. Hello, hello, hello.
Is the CRT the same as the 508?
Yeah, it's a trust. In other words, all trusts, whether civil, ecclesiastical, admiralty, whatever they are, judicial trusts, trusts that are created by the executive branch, they're meant to insulate, to isolate, to contain property. That's what the trusts are all about. And under ecclesiastical law, which is 508, recognized as 508 under the Internal Revenue Code, remember I said it's not under the code, it's just recognized by the code there, that is a trust that exists outside of the statutes. There you go.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Sure. That's it.
Yep. Thank you so much. That is a trust.
Okay. So you've got the trust, and then you have, well, how do I conduct the affairs of my society for those trusts, with those trusts? Well, you conduct them through a corporation's soul. Soul is S-O-L-E, not S-O-U-L. It's a corporation of one. And they're... Montana says that the corporation's soul is the trust. Excuse me, the corporation's soul is the man or the woman who's the manager of the corporation's soul. They're one and the same.
Okay.
There's a Florida case from the 1920s that says that the manager of the corporation's soul can spend money from totally through themselves and for themselves through the corporation's soul. It's a non-taxable event. It's not about income. It's about outgo. Because what comes in the form of a donation. It's a religious society.
So
now, commerce is a different thing. Go ahead.
I think that's what I was getting to. So is the 508 considered a non-profit?
Oh, absolutely it's a non-profit. And you can, if you have a corporation soul, which is recognized under 508C of the Internal Revenue Code, you have receipts in the library that Justice Beshear provides for you. You can give receipts, you know, for the donation of an automobile or whatever, and the people that you give those receipts to can write them off.
Okay. Now that's the, what you cannot operate a business under that 508?
No.
Okay.
No. However, a charitable religious trust, or rather, excuse me, let me back up, a limited liability company, and if it's Mr. Slevin's, number one, stands alone as a non-taxable entity.
Oh.
Now, let's give it some layers. I like layers. Keeps you warm. So you got the LLC that's non-taxable. You have two CRTs that are non-taxable entities, each owning 50-50% of the shares, if you would, of the LLC. Each of those CRTs are pass-throughs to FGTs, foreign grantor trusts, in a country like Belize, Nevis, St. Kitts, that says any money that you make inside of this country, you must keep all records and pay all taxes. We don't care what you do outside of our country. So if you have a foreign grantor trust, say out of Belize, that has that in their, that's their constitution, then the money made by the LLC, even if it was a taxable entity, by the time that it reaches the two foreign grantor trusts, and those two foreign grantor trusts forward that money to the parent foreign grantor trust. There's three of them involved there. So they first came through the two CRTs that were gates to the two FGTs that were pass-ons to the parent foreign grantor trust. Once it made that trip to the foreign grantor trust, in the Internal Revenue Code, even if it were taxable in the beginning, it's lost its taxability right there. And then the parent foreign grantor trust will then forward the money to the Private Interest Foundation in Panama, which also says, we don't care what money you make outside the country, inside this country. Oh, back it up. We don't care what kind of money you make outside of our country. It's not taxable. It's none of our business. So this is coming, this money from the parent foreign grantor trust is coming into the country, and they don't care. It's not a, that's a non-taxable source, and that's where your money sits and builds. Now, the only beneficiary, it's a single beneficiary, can be, is the corporation sole. The Private Interest Foundation has one beneficiary, and it's the corporation sole. The corporation sole, CITES, is back up in Montana, where it's recognized being a non-taxable entity. So you add to that, you having corrected your political citizenship status, which is without the United States, meaning it's outside the United States. The Internal Revenue Service is internal into the United States. Once you and federal citizens are internal to the United States, they're taxable, et cetera. In fact, they're property and franchise of the United States. You're not once you've corrected your political citizenship status. So every single step of the way, any place that's been touched, we used to say the tar baby, but that's been considered racist, and I don't know why. But anyways, the point being is that anything it touches now, any step of the way, it is totally non-taxable. Any part involved.
Okay.
And that's the end game plan that we bring to the table.
Okay. And so at that point, there's no possibility of commingling.
No, not if you're running what would be normally considered taxable money through the limited liability company. Sure. My pleasure. Anyone else? Press star 2 on your keypad. This is fun. Press star 2 on your keypad. Anyone else? Let me check Freedom's Radio while you're thinking about pressing what? Star 2 on your keypad. Refresh. Refresh. Come on. Come on. Don't be asleep. You're asleep. I'll be here in a minute. Well, it refuses to refresh for whatever reason. All right, back to you. Hey, Kent and Michael again. Go ahead, Kent. What's up?
Yeah, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Perfectly clear.
Okay, so what I want to ask you is how do you think this law that they just passed, this federal law, where in effect, anybody involved with a corporation, an LLC, or any other type of registered entity you were just talking, or the other gentleman was just talking about the filing of documents and forms. How do you think that may affect any of the entities that are being talked about being put into use here in this program, if you will, where they're going to want to determine who the beneficial owners are? They're not only going to do this for new entities that are being formed, but they're going to go back on old entities. They're not going to be grandfathered, et cetera. What would your comments on that be?
Well, I had had a conversation with Mr. Slevin about this and also with John. And we just come back. That before, you had a choice with Mr. Slevin's program of just doing that standalone. However, now if you incorporate the limited liability company, then when it identifies the beneficial owners, it's going to identify two non-taxable entities, two charitable religious trusts. And when the two charitable religious trusts, non-taxable entities, confess that they're simply moving that money to two foreign grantor trusts, and I refer to them as a boy foreign grantor trust and a girl foreign grantor trust, just keep things simple. And then we got the parent foreign grantor trust. You're telling the IRS everything that you're doing every step of the way. It used to be you could just do this without any complications based on, you know, the old way of doing it. Now, but with these new rules, it still is a non-effect because you're dealing, again, with non-taxpayers right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've corrected your political citizenship status and they want to bring a pile of rocks down on top of you for whatever reason, and they can and they will sometimes just because they can, you know, it doesn't cost them anything. They get paid by taxpayers. And so you get to pay for your own persecution if you're paying federal taxes. So they will do anything that they want to do. If you've corrected your political citizenship status, you're outside of their jurisdiction. And if you're successful and confident in what you know and understand about being an American national, you don't let them move past any point. And when they do move past any point tyrannically, then you slam them with a civil lawsuit, Title 42, Section 1983, 1985, 1986, whatever is applicable. And then that eventually would lead to a Title 18, Section 242 criminal charge. But you want to get the civil firmly adjudicated before you move on to criminal.
So basically this is going to be an unfolding process because we have those that believe that they're in a government where they can tell everybody what to do. Because mm-hmm. I'm still hearing some horrendous stories of even people that have done this process with the State Department, how the state thinks they can move ahead and really don't care about any of this. So
not one of GW's students have ever been harassed or lost in the process. Not one. Now there are mm-hmm. other people, other so-called information providers, that have their students that have been murdered and have had all sorts of problems. And that's simply because if you look at their processes, they go off into la-la land. And they're not covering the simple single solution, which is the declaration in the form of an affidavit.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have the education. They are not pursued to be educated. The people that have gone through GW's process through me, we're in contact with them. And you weren't on the call. Why not? Do you understand everything? Can you teach this? No? Well, if you can't teach it, then why aren't you there learning? I'm not shy about that.
No, and I understand what you're saying, Mike, but what I'm suggesting is that there are still very stubborn people out there in what they believe are tyrannical positions, that it's going to take civil lawsuits and then criminal actions against them to convince mm-hmm. them that this, you know, that they cannot do this.
Let me tell you two short stories.
Okay.
And I was eyewitness to one. Eyewitness. Mm-hmm. I was there.
Okay.
Gentleman went to Miami to go to the NIS office there to correct his political citizenship status without a Social Security number. He was thoroughly briefed by John on the position to take, there was a role play that went on for several times between the two. And we thought he was good. He's good to go. And so we're down in Miami, and I'm sitting there watching what's going on. They're threatening him with all sorts of fines and penalties regarding the fact that he's not using a Social Security number. It's as if he hadn't gone through any of the classes that, you know, private meetings that he had with John and myself. And he folded and gave them what they wanted. Now, another fellow, a doctor up in, I think he's up in Ohio maybe. This doctor just sat there and said, look, yeah, I had a Social Security number at one time, and I used it at one time. I didn't understand the ramifications of it. But, you know, since I've read Matthew 24 and chapter 24 and the other corresponding chapters in Mark, Luke, and John, I've read, which is all about the end times. I've read the book of Daniel that talks about the end times. And then when I read in the book of the Revelation, chapter 14, where it talked about that there was this numeration that you could not buy or sell, and anyone that accepted that numeration would not be allowed into heaven. At that point, I stopped using that number, and I refuse to use that number today. I will not present that number to you. And that's just the way it is. I'm more concerned about my afterlife than I am in this present life. And if I can no longer buy and sell or trade because I'm not going to use that number, and if I starve to death, I choose that. Because I'd rather starve to death here in obedience to the Almighty One than to not have eternity with the Almighty One. That's what he said. And they said, well, we're not processing this. Go away. And he did. He left. 3 days later, they call him, and they told him that they took everything that he had said, all of the paperwork that he had provided, and that they were instructed to provide him with his pass card and his passport without a Social Security number. You just
productive
have to be willing. Huh?
Yeah, that's a productive story. That needs.
You
that
just
needs
have to be willing to stand your ground.
Yeah, well, I know that, but I see a lot of people that can't stand their ground. You know, I'm not responsible for their conduct, good, bad, or indifferent.
Exactly.
But, you know, there's many people.
You know, scripture says, "Many are called, few are chosen." I wonder why.
Yeah. I want to ask another question or raise
sure.
another issue.
Sure.
There was a discussion today, earlier today, among some people about PMAs and what's being done to that. And it talks about, you know, we're talking about the same kind of abuses that continue on. What's being done with that Amish farmer out in Pennsylvania? And there's a couple of people that chimed in that said that they've looked into this issue, and the laws coming down, such as the one I referred to earlier with the divulging of information, are made with the intent, even though it's not mentioned in the law, they're made with the intent to eventually try to be able to pierce PMAs, which have become very popular. And so there was a couple of people that claim they've looked into this, and they think that one of the problems with the PMAs, and I know you don't spend a lot of time talking about PMAs, but, you know, there are people on this call. I'm sure there are people on this call that are aware of them or might think of using them in some form as a subset. They said that the problem seems to be that the word, and I heard you say this word in relation to something else before, is donation and offering, because those words are defined in the system, where a word such as contribution is not defined in the IRS code. Now,
Yes, it is.
Okay, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Contribution, golly, I can't remember. Let me see if I can find it real quickly here under. Let me go to Justice Breshear's folder that I have here, information providers, Bernie, and it was called contribution. Yeah, contribution is a very nasty word having to do with the IRS. Let me see if I can find it this way. Do a general search on the hard drive. Contribution. Emmys, contribution, service rulings, are you defined reference? Nope, don't see it there. Send me an email, please. And in the email, please ask Bernie the definition of contribution. And
okay, I'll do it with a text. All right.
Okay, yeah, do it with a text. And I'll get you the answer. But I can tell you right now, I don't remember the details of it, but I remember that a contribution means that you are responsible, you accept responsibility for the trust, for this SDK trust, the United States. It's really not good.
Okay. All right. I'll send you a text asking that. Well, it's kind of interesting because the same gentleman that was saying this, I believe it was the same gentleman, he was saying that regardless of how you gained your status as an American national or whatever other term you might want to use in lieu of American national, you have moved forward. Let me figure out how I want to say this as to what he was claiming. He was claiming that no matter how you did it, even if you did it nunc pro tunc, and I know that, you know, you and John and Greg don't agree with this, but if you had done it non pro tunc ab initio, that didn't matter because he was finding, or they were finding, a group of them were finding that even done that way with a very simple affidavit, the problem was the government was not recognizing it. The government was now starting to come back and say, or those that alleged to be government, were starting to come back and say that, no, at that point in time, you had not yet notified us, and therefore we consider you to have been a U.S. citizen at the time, let's say, that that crime was committed or that alleged crime was committed, et cetera. And I don't agree with any of that. I'm just suggesting
okay.
that
now, if
you,
I would,
you know, we
if
have
I
people
wanted
out there
to...
saying that.
If I were on the receiving end of that conversation, I would have said, wait a minute, I want to understand something here. You received from Vital Statistics, from the nation state, the state in perpetual union, you received from that state's Vital Statistics my birth certificate. Is that correct? Yes. Okay. So you then... quote, knowingly, willingly, and intentionally misfiled me as a federal citizen. And you want me to accept responsibility for being a federal citizen? Go pound sand. You're the one that committed the fraud. I am an American national by birth. In fact, I am Michael Edwards. The name of a sovereign occupying the position analogous of other sovereigns in the family of nations. Definition number one, Black's Law, United States. And that is my birthright. Do you have anything to rebut that with? If not, shut up. Number three, I am Michael Edward, a Floridian, domiciled in Florida, one of the several states in perpetual union. I am not Michael Edward, all uppercase. Domiciled in Washington, D.C., having residence in the state of Florida, a state of the United States. Now, you have anything contrary to my assertion there, my declaration, which I have presented to you under affidavit, you got a rebuttal, bring it on. You got evidence, bring it on. Otherwise,
in the form of an affidavit.
Oh, I don't want just an affidavit. I want somebody to personally take the stand under oath, having firsthand knowledge that contravenes what I just said. I want that person on the stand. Otherwise, pack sand and get out of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have that kind of authority in what you're saying. I'm not saying that because I'm arrogant or egotistical or anything else. If you know who you are, you're standing in the law, then that's what you assert, and that's what you stand your ground, and you do not waive. And that dentist up in Ohio, wherever it was, that doctor, he just said, no, I'm more concerned about my afterlife than I am this present life. And if I have to starve to death because I won't use your Social Security number, then I won't use it, and I'll starve to death. Thank you very much.
Well, listen, Mike, you know, for the time being in any of these kind of situations, you know, any of us that do this know and really believe in what we're doing, know that sometimes you may have to walk away and not get what you want, even if that's a temporary situation. But that's where most people are not willing to, you know, fight that battle and walk away and say, well, I'm going to take this up another day and get done what I need to get done. So consequently, you have this. But I was making the point, you know, I appreciate what you say because I think this benefits everybody on the call, whoever might be here. But, you know, I was making the point that we have a lot of people out there, as you've said many times, giving other people advice that's, you know, basically wholly incorrect. And some of these people, you know, are very knowledgeable and have spent a lot of time at this, but they've kind of like thrown up their hands on certain issues, like the non-pro-tunk issue. Ah, you can't do anything about it. So, you know, and they're telling other
people. You just used a word, Kent, I'm going to respond to for the benefit of the listeners on this call. You used the word advice.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very dangerous word to use with the shenanigans government pulls regarding practicing law without a license, et cetera. Anything, and of course it's all of the disclaimer that I say, anything that I'm sharing with you is what I, quote, what I would do were I similarly situated and nothing more, end quote. It's not advice. So I'm very particular about that. Maybe, you know, 6 months from now, I'll be charged with something. And I can pull this record and say, you know, on January 22nd, 2024, we had a conversation, and these are the people that heard the conversation. We covered this very same thing. So if they understood that I'm not giving advice, why can't you understand that? Are you a special kind of stupid?
Well, I'm glad I gave you the opportunity to express that.
Thank you. Anything else, sir?
No, I want to mention one other thing. There's a situation situation pending in Massachusetts now with a gentleman who's quite knowledgeable, wherein he claims, he was just telling me, and this is a one-on-one conversation, that the state told him regarding the registration, if you will, or the titling of vehicles, that they don't care about his American national status. They don't care about any rulings. He said this is the position that the DMV is taking in Massachusetts. They don't care about any rulings from the United States Supreme Court. If you don't have, if they consider you a resident of Massachusetts or you live there, whatever, you know, however they look at it, and you don't have plates, we're still going to go out and arrest you. And if you have DOT plates, we're going to consider those plates to be basically fake plates, and we're going to go out and arrest you, and we're going to make you fight us in court, and we're going to make you go through, you know, $1,000 worth of fees, you know, towing and go get your vehicle and tow it to another place because you still don't have a registration, et cetera, et cetera. He says they really got quite some attitude up here in Massachusetts. He says even when you've taken them, you know, to the fire pit before, so to speak, they still say, nope, that's the way we're going to do it, and you go ahead and fight us. We're not giving up this revenue. So kind of interesting.
Yeah, and the first thing that he should do when as soon as he's been injured is to go directly after the offending party with a Title 42, Section 1983 lawsuit. You know what they say, if you love wealth better than liberty, the tranquility of servitude better than the animating contest of freedom, go home from us in peace.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We are not.
Okay.
We ask you not for your counsel, nor your arms crouch down and lick the hand that feeds you. May your chains rest lightly upon you, and may your posterity forget you were ever our countrymen. Samuel Adams, the beer maker. Love his beer.
Very well said. Very well said. Okay. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, thank you. All right, back to I already muted you out. What did you say, Kent?
Oh, I said, let's see what Mike has got to say now.
There we go. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, fine.
The Social Security says right in their rules that you're not to give that number to anybody. You don't have to give that Social Security number. And the other thing is, you don't have to take that number. It also says that, too. But most people don't understand Social Security Trust Corporation. And I keep explaining to them, they don't have to give you anything back. You're donating money to them. They're a corporate. They're a corporate trust holding your money, which they never gave you full disclosure of, whether it was insurance, old age pension, retirement, which is all regulated, but they have not given you any information on that. They're violating the law.
Right.
And people just don't, they just don't, my Social Security, and I keep telling them by 19 or 2033 here, the, in fact, they say by 29 now, they'll be cutting way back on dispersing funds because the flow is slowing down and the end time for them is getting closer. So it went from 2040 to 2033, and now we're to 2029. So all these people that are receiving Socialist Security, that it's their money, and it was their money at one time. It was in an account in your name, but then they commingled all the funds together.
Right.
They have fake Federal Reserve notes. You got to understand that the whole system is collapsing. People do not comprehend that the system is collapsing on them,
right.
And it's not going to be pretty. If you don't know how to plant a seed and grow a garden or have any ammunition or know how to use a gun or a weapon or a sword, it says to sell your cloak, and I think it was Mark or Luke, Mark, it says to sell your cloak and buy two swords to defend yourself. It doesn't say to just give to Caesar without any question at all. Give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. Well, when they started this country, what they call the Constitution, there was no Caesar. They knew what Caesar was. They knew what the king was and his agents, and they're all thieves. And they were tired of it because in 1774, they were marching the judges out of the courthouses and making them read their own resignments as they walked down the street, on the steps, and then walking down the street. And some of them, they tarred and feathered. And they were all coming out with guns, long guns, because that's what mostly they had at the time. People are starting to wake up, but it's a slow awakening because they're really indoctrinated.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just thought I'd pass that along to them because they can't guarantee you when you sign up for Social Security, because now they're signing you up as a minor. You got to give that child a Social Security number before you get out, take him out of the hospital. No, you don't. That's a lie, and that's committing fraud. But the thing of it is they can't guarantee the value of that money you pay in now will be the value that you receive, and that's a contract law. So they're violating contract law because they can't guarantee the value that you'll receive when you go to receive it is the same as the value that you invested.
Right.
So, yes, you can use their law against them. But Chris Wright. They don't want to give up the money.
Alrighty.
All about their money. So there you go. You have it.
Well, the only thing that they understand is dealing with the violations of federal law, and you drag them into the courthouse under federal law and deprivation of rights under color of law. You put on yourself the mantle of the sovereign as a private attorney general, and you go after them. And you use the team to educate you step by step how to do it. Anything else, Mikey?
No, that's it. People need to keep listening and to read more and to educate themselves and quit being so indoctrinated as to, well, whatever they say I have to do. No, it doesn't work like that.
Right. All righty. Well, thank you for joining us tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. I spoke with John earlier today, and he is looking forward to being returning tomorrow night, sharing with you more information about how the application of the offense of deprivation of rights under color of law will work for you. And until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.